Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Michael Tunnell joins me. We're going to be talking about blockchains in Tari. Tari manages digital assets. You're not going to want to miss this, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Michael Tunnell. Episode 514, recorded January 16th, 2019. Tari. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by DigitalOcean, the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications. Over 150,000 businesses rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, Libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and not aware of it, projects you may want to download right after this show and play with. Today probably might be one of those. Joining me once again is my lovely and talented co-host for his second time back, Michael Tunnell. Michael, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm great. I'm glad to be here, especially for this one, because I'm really excited to talk about Tari.
Okay, cool, cool. Well, you gave away the name of the show already, but that's okay. You're allowed to do that. it's not like there's any secret. I mean, it's right there on the label as you're downloading the show, so there's really no problem with that. I am once again in ZipRecruiter, my longtime client, I think almost 4 years now, maybe a little more than 4 years, and I am in yet another conference room here that is named after a local beach. This is the Manhattan, of which on the video you can see Ma. It's the Ma of Manhattan, and you can see the pier apparently they have there. I haven't been to Manhattan Beach, so I don't know where it is. And Michael, where are you speaking to us from?
I am from Birmingham. You're speaking from Birmingham, Alabama.
Birmingham, Alabama. Well, yeah. Wave in that general which direction is it? That way. Okay, I'm waving in that
somewhere
general
in
direction.
The south.
Somewhere that away. Yes, exactly. I'm trying to. Well. The thing about San Monica is that all the streets are diagonal. So I keep, like, my Airbnb gave me instructions to talk about going to the north side of the street or the west side of the street. And I went, streets aren't north and west. They don't actually go that way. But that's life. Anyway, I remember working in, I'm going to be rambling just for another second, then we can get started. I remember working in the South Bay area. And for them, because the 405 and the 101 were essentially going east and west, although all the signs said north and south, you would actually hear people describe locations as, you know, east of the 101. Well, that doesn't make any sense because it's going east and west. So that's just life. Anyway, enough of that. Hey, so today, as you mentioned, we have on Tari. And taken right from their website, Tari is a new open source digital assets focused blockchain protocol. Now, if you're playing the blockchain drinking game, you should stop now because you're going to get completely messed up on the show. That is being architected as a merge mind sidechain with Monero. We chose to focus specifically on digital assets, things like tickets, loyalty points, in-game items, and crypto native assets like CryptoKitties. We'll have to get them to describe what that's all about. I think I know a little bit about it. Because we see a huge opportunity to revolutionize the way these assets are owned, managed, and transferred. We're going to have two guests on today. We're going to have both Naveen Jain. I hope I pronounced that right. I guess he'll correct me if I'm wrong. And Ricardo Spogni. They're both going to come on. Ricardo Spogni is one of the guys that started the Monero project. And he's definitely involved heavily with this project. And so we'll talk a little bit about that coming up soon. What do you know about this so far?
I'm really a big fan of Monero. I'm somewhat familiar with Tari. They started talking about it like last year, and I've been kind of following it a little bit, not a lot, but I am a big fan of Monero, especially the way that the infrastructure of Monero is so unique as far as like the ideology goes. So I'm really excited to talk about it.
Cool. And again, we've had many shows about blockchain, probably too many shows about blockchain over the past couple of years. For those of you who have no idea when I say the word blockchain, what I'm talking about, it's imagine like Bitcoin. You probably heard of Bitcoin and its way of having a public ledger that allows you to transfer in this case, financial assets, bitcoins, from person to person, pseudonymously, not anonymously, like I think Monero has the capability of doing. And this transfer is done by essentially doing a very difficult calculation, which is getting harder and harder to do. There are so many computers in the world that are currently calculating Bitcoin that I think it's enough to power a small country, as I recall. So it's pretty bad. Hopefully Monero doesn't suffer from that, at least yet. I kind of wonder if all blockchain technology, I'll ask them this when they come on, whether all blockchain technology will eventually get to the point where it's computationally super expensive like Bitcoin. But we'll see. There's always lots of things to do like that. Anything else you can tell us about this?
I mean, I think that the Tari system is really – it's what's really interesting is it's very similar, or not exactly similar to Ethereum system for the tokens, but it's kind of similar to their – like it's without smart contracts. But they're going to have to explain more details about what that all means, because I even tangentially I am aware of it, but not fully, you know, versed in it.
Well, it's good because that means we're both going to be very accurate proxies for our audience, which is always a good thing for us to be. And that's deliberately why I don't research too much of these shows before I actually come into the show, because I have a natural curiosity about all sorts of things, and but not intelligence about all sorts of things. So I also understand that Big Neon is tied into this a bit, so we'll have to talk about that a little bit as we get into the show. But before we do that, I do have a very important message, because this episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by DigitalOcean. DigitalOcean provides the easiest cloud platform to deploy, manage, and scale applications with Droplets, which are virtual machines that are a scalable compute platform with add-on storage, security, and monitoring capabilities. You can choose from the standard or CPU-optimized Droplets and customize from there. DigitalOcean is designed for developers. The easy-to-use control panel and API lets developers spend more time coding and less time managing their infrastructure. Industry-leading price to performance. Access the compute resources you need at the lowest rates, saving up to 55% compared to other cloud providers. And you'll always know what you'll pay per month with a flat pricing structure across all data center regions. Included at no additional cost. 99.99% uptime SLA. Cloud firewalls, monitoring and alerting, full DNS management, global data centers, enterprise SSDs, easy-to-use API. Over 150,000 businesses, including some of the world's fastest-growing startups, including Stonehenge.com, my company, rely on DigitalOcean to remove infrastructure friction and deliver industry-leading price performance. Sign up today and receive a free $100 credit at do.co/twit. That's do.co/twit for a free $100 credit. And we thank DigitalOcean for their support of Floss Weekly. Let's go ahead and bring on our guests. So let's first bring on Naveen Jain. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I am in San Francisco.
Oh, cool. So I'll be waving that general direction. I think that's over here somewhere. All right. That's fine. Nobody saw me wave, but that's okay. All right. And then let's also bring on Ricardo Spagni. Spagni, something like that. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Cool. And where are you speaking to us from?
From South Africa, on the southern coast of South Africa. So I'm deep south.
Okay, let me see if I can calculate where that is. Probably over there somewhere. Hi, hello. I'm waving at you somewhere over there. It's a stupid thing, but I do it sometimes. So let's start with Naveen. Give us the 30,000-foot view. What would people be reaching for when they're saying, I got to use Tari for this?
So Tari is a digital asset-focused protocol project. So the whole idea is to reimagine and re-envision how digital assets, you know, as you said earlier, things like concert tickets, loyalty points, in-game items are issued and managed. So today you have a world where all these sort of digital assets are issued on a centralized basis in these sort of walled gardens, or once they're issued, there's no sort of control from the issuer. So for example, concert ticket, once a concert ticket is sold, if it's a paper ticket or even if it's a digital ticket, they have no ability to control what happens to that ticket after the fact. So there's a lot of really interesting business problems that can be solved if you use sort of a blockchain system as sort of the underlying layer. So for example, in the ticketing business, one of the biggest problems is the fact that the original economic participants in the sale of a ticket to the venue, the promoter, the artist, or team don't benefit when their tickets are resold. That's like an $8 billion plus industry, ticket resale. So imagine a world where they could issue tickets, they could set rules around those tickets, say they want a percentage of the revenue every time the ticket is resold, and they could trust that the network will help enforce those rules. And then there are other issues like, you know, having something that's truly digitally scarce is really valuable. So, you know, you can eliminate counterfeits, eliminate double spend. And there's some other really, really cool things you could do from a business standpoint, issuing your digital assets on something like the Tari network.
Yeah, there was a whole episode on NPR, on Planet Money, the podcast, talking about that, how Taylor Swift was actually producing tickets to guarantee a certain level of revenue and things like that. But, I mean, what's the problem with that? I mean, I go to Ticketmaster, which I can say out loud because they were a client of mine at one point, right? And a competitor of what you're doing. But and I buy a ticket. And then I either I get a code or I get something I have to print out or whatever. And then I take that to the venue and I've got it. So what problem is this part of it solving?
Well, so the people who take the risk to put on a show are the promoter and the artist and the venue. And so, you know, you have this entire secondary market that's sort of proliferating out there. They're just not able to participate in that. So from their point of view, from the digital asset issuer's point of view, it would be great if they can participate. So today you have a situation where these secondary market sites where people trade concert tickets, for example, charge a really high fee. They charge upwards of 25% split between buyer and seller. How cool would it be if you could shift some of that value, some of that revenue from the secondary market back to the people who are actually putting on the show? You know, the artist, the venue, the promoter, the sports team, you know, these people that work really, really hard to put on an incredible show, in our view, should be able to benefit from that. You know, so at the end of the day, the idea of someone who's an intellectual property owner, whether it's a game publisher or an artist or whoever it is, they should be able to govern and control what happens with their IP, you know, their work product. So really the idea is this sort of a system helps them do that. And then there's other things. So for example, you know, I don't know when the last time is you went to a concert, like last time I went to a concert, you know, I get this barcode, this QR code. And once the show is done, it's useless to me, you know? So to me, I had an incredible experience. So it has a lot of intrinsic value, but that's it. So the cool thing about tokenizing tickets or tokenizing in-game items or whatever is you can do all sorts of things after the fact. So you could use the fact that you have like a token and you could use it for attestation. So now you can say, oh, you know, I want to talk to people who saw two shows or went to two concerts at this venue or, you know, did these two actions. And I want to offer them something. So maybe it's a streaming service or something that wants to target people who really love a certain genre of music. And now you can like cryptographically prove. You can say, hey, you know, no, I actually am a huge fan, you know, and I've been to the shows. Here's the stubs. You know, so I think there's lots of really interesting things you can do with a system like this that you can't do in sort of a traditional environment.
Of course, it's already raising the hair on the back of my neck about privacy issues. Won't you? Since this is a public ledger that's going to be describing that I went to a Taylor Swift show, why? If anybody could figure that out, why am I not revealing unwittingly some things about me?
Well, so first of all, we care deeply about privacy. So it comes down to how the system is being architected. So I think Ricardo can speak better about some of the ideas that we have about how to architect the system. And just to be clear, something like an attestation is entirely user governed. So it's not like some streaming service is going to go and, you know, have this giant database. They can target people in some particular way. It's more of, hey, you know, you can prove that you did something if you choose to, right? So it's not sort of like a giant, you know, Big Brother-esque marketing engine that's being created. It's more of saying, hey, you know, I've done these things in my life. I have all of these tokenized tickets or whatever, in-game items, assets, collectibles, whatever. I have all these wonderful things. And now I can, if I choose to share that information that I have these things, I can. You know, so it's more of a user-centric, user-focused methodology, not a Big Brother methodology like, you know, we sort of have today.
Cool. And what's your relationship to the Tari project?
So I'm a co-founder of the Tari project, along with Ricardo and Dan.
Okay, so let's talk to Ricardo for a second. Naveen talked a little bit about the design and architecture of Tari. Can you tell us a little more about that and how privacy is ensured?
Sure. So I'm a big believer in personal, the right to personal privacy. And so some of the things that, that a lot of people aren't aware of is that a blockchain isn't inherently public. I mean, the data on it is public, but that doesn't mean that everything else is. So perhaps a good example is, imagine if you had a hash of a password. It's a strong password, it's a salted hash, and you made the hash public. It, you know, if it's a strong hashing algorithm, it's kind of not a big deal, especially if it's a strong password. And so you don't mind storing that data publicly because no one, presumably, ostensibly, can go and crack that. So a lot of the design and architecture that we're playing around with follows the same pattern. So, you know, let's store a Merkle root of a piece of information instead of storing the raw information. And then let the person decide and govern what access is given. So Naveen gave a good example of attestations. And I think a counterexample to that is, how does it work today? So the way it works today is your data is controlled by a corporation and they can decide whatever they want to do with it. And GDPR in Europe has given us unique insights into this. As an example, when you make a PayPal payment anywhere in Europe or using a European merchant who accepts PayPal, or if you are a European using PayPal, PayPal shares your data with over 600 companies and organizations. Mm. And they do so without saying to you, hey, we want to share your data with 600 companies. You just agree to the terms and conditions, and you know that's the end of that. Now, as a counterpoint to that, or as sort of what we're trying to design with Tari, imagine if instead of your data going out to 600 companies, all that the company knows, who, or the asset issuer knows, is that an entity, a public key, owns that asset. They don't know who the public key belongs to. They can't assert any other information about the public key except that it owns this asset that they've issued. So let's take an example of loyalty points. Let's say Emirates issues loyalty points, and you need to accumulate a certain number of loyalty points in order to be an Emirates gold, silver, diamond, whatever it is, platinum, I don't know, member. Then you now have that status, and you need to prove to another service that you have that status. Maybe it's, you know, you get a free download if you are an Emirates gold or above member. How do you assert that without revealing your identity to that that entity, to that, you know, to get that digital download? Well, in the classic sense of it, Emirates would have some relationship with the company, and that company would then, you know, have some data sharing thing, and there'd maybe be a rev share for, you know, add-ons or whatever. But under the Tari model, that company can now interact with Emirates' loyalty-owning customers without even asking Emirates for permission. They can just say, hey, we want to assert that you are an Emirates Skywards member and that you own 70,000 loyalty points, 70,000 miles, whatever it is. And then in Tari, it'll pop up with a little message to say, hey, do you want to, you know, this website is requesting this piece of information. Do you agree to share it? And you agree to share it without sharing your identity. All you're sharing from a, like in the back end, is a cryptographic proof that says, I am signing a message to validate that I own X amount of this asset, and this is my public key. And then that website can go and check the Tari network to go and figure out if that is true, if that attestation is true. So it's more privacy preserving, far more privacy preserving than the current status quo. And I think that that's something that is sorely needed in this day and age of, you know, hacks and metadata leaks and information leaks and companies sharing your data with whoever they choose.
And since you're a co-founder of the Monero project, I want to ask, so Tari is just basically a specific application that's running using the Monero technology, and are there other uses for Monero besides Tari?
That's a great question. So just to clarify, I didn't start Monero. I didn't found it. The guy that started Monero is a guy called Thankful for Today. And okay. I was one of the original seven people that took over the project when he ended up being a not-so-benevolent dictator. And And I've been.
We may have to get into that later.
Cool. I've been the lead maintainer since 2014. So, you know, this sort of podcast is very close to my heart, having been deeply involved in being part of a Floss community, but also being in that sort of position where you have to manage the children, manage the eggs very, very neatly. At any rate, to go back to your question, so yes, Tari's built on top of Monero. There are various ways of building things on top of Monero. You can build things on top of Monero's transactions. That's one way of doing it, in which case, yes, you leverage Monero's privacy. What we're doing at Tari, or what we hope to do at Tari, rather, as the project evolves, is to leverage Monero's security model. So this speaks very much to what you mentioned earlier about Bitcoin and other proof-of-work cryptocurrencies like Monero and the electricity consumption, the energy consumption. Now, you know, the sort of reality of the situation is there was a fantastic white paper published by an organization called CoinShares last year, towards the end of last year, and they found that 80% of Bitcoin mining is done sustainably. So from that perspective, from a sustainable energy perspective, great. But, you know, there's still the 20% that you have to concern yourself with. And, of course, they, you know, that percentage might change in future. It is a race to the bottom, but still. And so when you create a merge mined chain, when you merge mine with a currency like Bitcoin or like Monero, what you're basically doing is saying we want the security benefits of that that secure proof-of-work mined chain where you basically, to try and attack it, you have to accumulate enough or amass enough mining equipment to compete with the network, which has a massive upfront cost and a continuous electricity cost as you're, you know, burning cycles to try and attack the chain. So you want that security. It's very powerful. It's literally being secured by energy in the universe. And yet you don't want to go and add to that. You don't want to have an additional energy consumption or an energy burden. And so that's what merge mining does. It just sort of plugs it in on the side, and you get all of those security benefits without additional energy waste.
Wow. You know, well, as soon as you said sustainable, I was kind of laughing at what that must possibly mean. I mean, does that mean they're mining enough Bitcoin to pay for the electricity they're burning and wasting?
So sustainable energy in this context means renewable energy. So there's a great deal. I mean, I've personally dealt with some of the farms that are in Mongolia, and a lot of them use wind and hydro energy. Those are massive elements of their energy gain. And the reason that they want to use sustainable and renewable energy sources is because, like I said, it's a race to the bottom. And what is the cheapest electricity? Well, the cheapest electricity is the electricity where you only pay for the equipment and then like some maintenance versus having to pay the power grid for electricity. So, you know, it's going to – I hope that situation is going to continue to improve, because mining farms desperately need cheap electricity, which means not paying a power provider.
Sure. And what's the relationship between Tari and Big Neon?
That's an excellent question. So Big Neon is one of the first applications being built on top of Monero. So you kind of have being built on top of Tari. So you have Monero at the base layer, Tari being built on top of Monero and leveraging that security layer, and then Big Neon that's actually using what Tari is building, which is this decentralized assets protocol.
Okay. So I'm looking at the Big Neon site. I see that I can buy concert tickets and things like that. How does that actually work? So I'm typing in my credit card somewhere probably, and somehow I get some sort of barcode that I can scan when I get to the venue. But what's happening behind the scenes at that point?
Sure. So this is very Big Neon's, and it's in very early stages. So, you know, I guess what's best is to describe how we envision it will work and how we're building it out to work. Because Tari is a Floss project that is very community driven. So I'm basing this on the discussions the community has had and that the Tari contributors have had. But basically what will happen and the way any asset issuance will work is that Big Neon would issue an asset on the Tari blockchain for a show that you're going to see. And that asset would then, let's say it's 300 people going to the show, so they would issue 300 of this asset class. And then when you go and buy two tickets, you get two of those asset, you know, the two of those tickets, those digital tickets, those tickets represented on the Tari network sent to you. And obviously, like internally within the Big Neon app on your phone, it has a private key, and it sends the public key to Big Neon, and Big Neon says, okay, cool, there's the asset for that public key. And when you go to the door and you show a QR code, it's not just a QR code that's, you know, that's sort of representing your asset. It's a QR code that's representing an interaction with the Big Neon app, an interaction point, whether that is an IP address or, well, you know, an onion routing address is most likely the way it could work. And then there's a little bit of handshaking that goes on between the guy, the device at the door and your device to say, hey, I want to redeem these two tickets. Can you sign to validate that you indeed have the private key for the public key that owns these assets? And then there's the signature, and it sends the message with the signature. And then the door thing says, okay, cool, I've redeemed this. And the global state is updated. Not the global state for the whole network, the global state for that asset and for all the parties that are interested in that asset, which would presumably be other people at the door who are scanning tickets.
That's interesting, because based on that, you're saying that if it's just doing the asset globally, that means that in theory, the confirmation for the ticket purchase or like to verify could be relatively pretty quick, instead of like the typical blockchain thing of taking, you know, up to hours depending on what you're doing. Is that the case?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. So yes, the reality. The reality is that asset issuance is inherently centralized. You know, I mean, it's silly for us to pretend it isn't and say, oh, you know, the asset just came into existence and we don't know how. There's an issuer who created the asset. And so that issuer is also able to then either set up their own infrastructure or rent out infrastructure using a system that Tari is designing. That rented or owned infrastructure would be the thing that actually goes, oh, cool, we all agree on the state and we're all updating the state. And, you know, that infrastructure can be one high-powered server, it can be an AWS instance, it can be a bunch of other people running AWS instances. So it can be extremely fast, whereas you're talking about a handful of peers on the network that need to agree on things, not the entire network, because that's just silly.
Yeah, I understand that, and I totally agree. That makes a lot of sense, especially for the issuer system, as far as like you know, supply and demand. Typically, in a digital content, there is no such thing as supply and demand, you know, because there's no such thing as scarcity. And as I understand it, this is a way to create a scarcity for the issuer so that they can control how many things are available, and as well as like make sure that there's only, if someone purchases a ticket, that's only accessible for that one particular asset and it can't be duplicated or copied. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So the key is that everyone has visibility over the asset issuance. So, you know, if an asset issuer says, well, we're issuing 300 tickets for this venue, then you're able to go and confirm that only 300 tickets have been issued. And if they go and issue another 300 tickets for the same venue on the same night, something's going on. And that, you know, being able to observe that and obviously raise the red flag is the thing that keeps the asset issuer in check.
Nice. So let's go back a little bit. You mentioned earlier that the Merge Minds sidechain for Tari and Monero. I'm curious, so some of my favorite things about Monero is the security model and the privacy model. So does Tari utilize the same models that Monero offers, since it's based on the same the same technology, or is there like a different implementation? Like for example, how important? Because in some cases you would say that it would kind of, the privacy could be more lenient on, say, like a ticket sale or something.
Yeah, so I think there's two different aspects here. There's the base layer of Tari has its own token, which is required to pay fees and to do things like rent resources and so on. And the reason for this is obvious. You can't transfer a ticket from one person to another and pay the fee in tickets. That just doesn't make sense. So, you know, there's a native token. And the native token is also the thing that merged miners get rewarded by. One of the big things that was happening when we started thinking about Tari was Mimblewimble. Mimblewimble had dropped, and I was super excited about it. This is like, you know, day one, day two after the paper gets dropped. And I'm like, you know, busy processing it and ingesting it. And I'm like, wow, this is really cool. It's a completely different set of privacy. Privacy in Monero is, you know, not perfect. But in Mimblewimble, it's not perfect either. But in Mimblewimble, it's a different set of privacy assumptions and privacy compromises than in Monero. But it has massive scalability gains. So, you know, less privacy than Monero, massive scalability gains. That's advantageous, especially for a sidechain, because it means that a user can move from a base token perspective. They can go, I have Monero, I want to perform an atomic swap and go into Tari and use Tari for the scalability or for digital assets or whatever. And now I want to move back into Monero because I want the enhanced privacy. And, you know, that ability to move back and forward between both chains that have very strong privacy, you know, but just sort of different trade-offs, I think is a very, very powerful system and a big advantage for Monero.
Okay, so that makes me – you're saying about the atomic swap back and forth. Does that mean that the value of an individual token on Tari is related to the value of Monero coin?
Yes. So, you know, atomic swaps are interesting because the you know, you're able to move effortlessly between chains, but there's still a price discovery mechanism, right? Somebody has to own Tari and say, I'm willing to trade Tari via an atomic swap for Monero. And so there's still, even though it's done via decentralized way, so like via DEX, that's all baked into the atomic swap process, you're still effectively having to do price discovery on the Tari price against the Monero price.
Oh, okay. So speaking about atomic swapping, is there any like work on trying to make, you know, connected with like Lightning, for example?
Yes. So one of the big things that we've been doing, we set up a blockchain incubator in South Africa called Tari Labs. And Tari Labs is obviously, you know, the hint is in the name. They're going to be contributing to Tari. To the Tari ecosystem as well. And so one of the things that we've been working on at Tari Labs over the past few months has been contributing to Rust Lightning, which is Matt Corrado's implementation of Lightning in Rust. And the idea behind this is, this is going to take a while, but the idea behind this is to, over the course of the next year and a half, 2 years, however long it takes, bring Lightning to Monero and bring Lightning to Tari. Because instead of going and reinventing the wheel and trying to figure out how to do atomic swaps between the two chains and how to do, you know, the DEX and yada, 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 we think it makes a lot more sense to just go and offload that to Lightning, because there are already a bunch of really smart people that are figuring out how to do atomic swaps, how to do price discovery, all of that good stuff over Lightning. And if we can plug Monero and Tari into Lightning, then boom, atomic swap solved.
Nice. So Naveen, I'm curious, as far as with the asset system, would it be like, would there be some kind of reduction for like a loss of like a middleman structure? Like if you were to sell issue your token or your Tari through it, and not to worry about the middleman fees that like Ticketmaster takes. Is there any kind of like infrastructure there?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the really cool things that we're doing is, you know, all the software that we're contributing to within the Tari ecosystem is open source. So, one of the things that we think is really interesting is if you're a venue owner, maybe you own a sports team or whatever, a league, whatever it is, you could choose to fork Big Neon and sell tickets yourself, right? So, you know, at the end of the day, what service is being provided and who wants to do that service, right? So there's a customer service requirement, there's infrastructure, payment processing, you know, all these various capabilities that, you know, typical ticketing companies provide. So our point of view is, you know, how cool would it be if there was a truly enterprise grade, really world-class totally open source ticketing system that is built to leverage the Tari network. And, you know, from our point of view, that's really cool on a couple levels. So one, it's really interesting in the ticketing space because, to the best of our knowledge, there aren't a lot of really great open source ticketing applications, number one. Number two, it also really benefits other entrepreneurs, other developers who want to build really cool digital asset-oriented applications that make use of something like the Tari network, because they can pull components. They can pull libraries, patterns, et cetera, from the Big Neon stack. And hopefully that helps them develop whatever they want to build. So from our point of view, you know, does this result in sort of a shift in economics? It could. It certainly could. But, you know, that just depends on the individual issuer and what their requirements are.
Okay. So I'm curious, Naveen, how does Tari compare with something like Counterparty?
That's a really good question. So, I mean, from our point of view, you know, we look at something like Tari as sort of a next generation or an evolution of something like Counterparty. So, you know, obviously Counterparty uses embedded consensus with Bitcoin. And it was sort of designed technology first, you know, so it's like, hey, wouldn't it be really cool if we could do non-fungible tokens? Would it be really cool if we could find a way to leverage the Bitcoin blockchain? These are really, really cool ideas. But from our point of view, the best way to really build something useful is to start talking to digital asset issuers on the front end, concurrent to actually developing the system. So I think one of the things that makes the Tari project so special is that's exactly what we're doing. That's what Big Neon is. You know, Big Neon is sort of an opportunity for us to say, hey, what are the requirements? What are the nuances, the needs of digital asset issuers? In this case, people who issue concert tickets. And then how does that relate to the underlying protocol, the trade-offs, the architectural decisions that the community is making with respect to the underlying Tari protocol? So we think that it's sort of it's just a different way of approaching how to develop something like this. And the goal is ultimately to create something that's really useful. And that's our point of view.
Nice. So I'm curious about, since we're talking about Big Neon, the founder of Big Neon also was like the founder of Ticketfly. And Ticketfly was a heavily a proprietary technology, and then they sold it to other companies and things like that. Whereas Big Neon is starting out with the open source approach. So why did you? I mean, I'm not sure if, because you said that the guy who's Dan's also a part of Tari. How did you come to the decision of open sourcing all of the infrastructure, especially like Big Neon?
Yeah, so it's actually really interesting. So in the ticketing space, a lot of the large ticketing companies are running really legacy software. So the way the business works is, you know, large ticketing companies generally sign exclusive contracts with promoters and venue owners, and these contracts have meaningful terms. So once you sign one of these contracts, you know, I'm not saying that the ticketing companies don't innovate, but there's less pressure. There's less pressure to, you know, add new functionality, really think about the user experience differently, et cetera. And that's why, from a consumer experience standpoint, there hasn't been a meaningful change in how consumers buy tickets, how they redeem tickets. You know, the overall experience hasn't really shifted in a large way. So one of our thoughts, and you know, obviously Dan is a part of the founding team for the Tari project. It's Dan, myself, and Ricardo. And yes, Dan is a co-founder of Ticketfly. And Dan has an incredible amount of experience in the ticketing space. One of the ideas here is, hey, you know, an open source methodology is really cool, because if you're a large ticketing company and you have a buy versus build analysis decision, you know, you're like, okay, well, I'm dealing with all this technical debt. I have this proprietary software. Do I want to rewrite it? Do I want to refactor it in some way? What do I want to do with this? Or, hey, wait, there's this really awesome, totally modern ticketing stack that was built in Rust. It's using a super permissive license. Hey, cool. Maybe I could just use that. And then I get all these benefits that the Tari blockchain offers me as well in terms of the business. So we think that open source, an open source ticketing system is sort of like part of the next revolution here in the ticketing industry.
Okay, I got to ask, because I read it in the opening, what is a CryptoKitty? Either of you can answer that.
Well, Ricardo's a fluffy pony, so I think he should answer.
Okay, sure.
Okay, so CryptoKitties is, I guess, the first really successful crypto collectible. So it's issued on a blockchain, and it's a silly little game where you can, like, you know, you buy these kitties and then, like, they breed with each other, and there's, like, a whole evolution thing. And people went ballistic for it, like, completely, absolutely besotted with CryptoKitties for, like, 2 weeks, and then, you know, got very bored. But the point is that it revolutionized in many ways, or not revolutionized, but it inspired people and gave them a vision of a future where digital collectibles with provable scarcity were a thing, where you didn't have a centralized issuer going, oh, yes, you know, this is a rare Pokemon, we promise, where people were able to actually validate that this particular creature was super rare because no one else had one, or there were only three in the world or whatever.
Wow. Okay. So people have way too much time on their hands, or maybe money. It's one of the two, or maybe both. That could be it. Yes. So we've been talking about Big Neon as a way of generating tickets, but we also mentioned in the opening that you're talking about loyalty points, in-game items. Have there been any projects started like that on Tari yet?
Yeah. So great question. So from our point of view, one of the biggest challenges in the blockchain space is that there really isn't a lot of enterprise adoption today, right? There aren't a lot of people really making use of this infrastructure. A lot of really great ideas, a lot of really smart people working on this sort of technology, not really used, and frankly, not really that useful yet. So our thought was, hey, wait, you know, we have this idea for how to build something like Tari. Okay, that's cool. We're collaborating with the community. There's a community that's forming around the Tari project. A lot of really interesting people are collaborating on developing this thing. But how do we actually convince digital asset issuers to make use of something like this? So from our point of view, it's, you know, how do you earn trust? You know, at the end of the day, that's just really important. No one's going to use something if they don't trust it and if they don't Right. understand how it's going to actually benefit them. So one of the things that's really important about the Big Neon project is from our point of view, it's a way for us to earn trust. It's like, hey, here's a real business. It's a real business that is selling tickets, issuing tickets on the Tari blockchain for concerts that you can go to. You can buy tickets. You can see how the whole thing works end to end. And by the way, it's totally open source. So go look mm-hmm. at the code base. You can see how the whole thing works front to back. Don't take our word for it. And the Tari system is completely open source as well. So again, don't take our word for it. You can trust, but then verify if you choose to. And so that creates an opportunity then for other types of digital asset issuers to engage and start to make use of it. I think from a gaming perspective, there's a lot of really interesting opportunities around, you know, shared IP. So, you know, if you have someone who owns intellectual property, so, you know, it could be an example like Marty McFly's hoverboard, you know, from Back to the Future or something like that. It's just a really cool piece of IP, you know, and different game publishers want to make use of that IP. You know, here's an asset that's been issued on the Tari blockchain by the IP owner. And now you could have multiple game publishers who are taking advantage of it. So there could be some really interesting things you could do there. You know, interoperability between digital assets. So, hey, I've got, you know, digital asset type A, and I want to trade it with somebody who has digital asset type B. You know, so there's all sorts of really interesting things that a system like this can enable that today we don't really have. And then the final thing that we think is really important with a system like this is this idea of giving people more ownership. So right now, if I buy a ticket and I get a paper ticket in the mail, you know, I feel like I own it, just like I feel like I own a baseball card or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. When I buy an in-game item, it may be a license. I don't really own it, and I can't take it out of that ecosystem, right? I can't do anything with it outside of the closed, you know, marketplace. Well, what if there's a way for the consumer to actually feel like they own something? At the same time, while there's an opportunity for the issuer to set rules around that item so they feel like they have the control too. So you get kind of get the best of all worlds. And we think that's a really, really unique opportunity. And that's one of the things we're most really excited about with respect to the Tari project.
Does that mean you could use this? I'm just thinking out loud now because it's amazing. Does that mean instead of paying with my credit card to all these different vendors for all the software that I've had to purchase, because amazingly enough, I actually buy some software too. I don't just run open source stuff. So does that mean that that could all have been sent through Tari to verify ownership and identity?
Sure. I mean, there are all sorts of things you could do. So, you know, you gave a software example. Ricardo gave a loyalty points example. I'll give you an example of something that just happened recently. I have status on an airline, and a lot of the airlines have status matching programs. So here's the process today. Okay, here's an email. Here's an obscure email at the airline. And, oh, you have to take a screenshot of you know, you log in to the other airline where you have status. You take a screenshot of the page that proves that you have the status, right? And you send a PDF or a JPEG or whatever to this obscure email address. And maybe you take a photo of the card, the membership card. You send that too. And then you wait. You wait for weeks. And maybe somebody gets back to you and says, oh, hey, okay, Mr. Jane, you know, you're going to choose to fly our airline now? Great, no problem. You know, we'll give you trial status, you know, for 3 months. And if you fly us a lot, then sure, we'll make that status, you know, permanent for you for the next 12 months, whatever the term is. Imagine what Ricardo said at the beginning of the conversation as the process going forward. It's like, no, I want, as a consumer, I want status on this airline. I want to prove to them that I'm a great customer for them.
Right.
So now I can attest. I can attest to them that, hey, look, yeah, I have 100,000 points from this other program. Or, hey, you know, I've been to this many concerts. Here are all the tickets I have. Or, hey, I play a lot of video games. I've spent a lot of money on in-game items. Or, hey, I have a bunch of software licenses. Or whatever it is, whatever the heck it is, whatever's being issued. Now, me as a consumer, I can choose to attest, you know, that that's the fact. And it's cryptographically proven, right? So there's a lot of really interesting ideas here in terms of changing user behavior, changing how companies interoperate, you know, how you prove things. You know, and I think there's a lot of really interesting opportunity here with something like the Tari project.
And I'm a heavy Second Life user now, although it's kind of weird. I got my brother into it about 13 years ago. Then I went away from it and only just started back again a few years ago. But one of the things that's there is there's this in-game currency called Lindens. But I'm just thinking that, you know, the what's the company that runs Second Life? Linden something? Linden Labs.
Linden Labs,
The tomorrow, they could say, no, you don't have 70,000 Linden dollars over there. You have 3,000. And there's no proof for that. There's no way I can claim that. Could Linden replace all the back end regarding the math on Lindens and the exchange of that in game and the exchange of that in and out of real currencies? Could they replace all that with Tari?
Totally. So, I mean, at the end of the day, Tari has an issuance model for the Tari token, and the Tari token has meaningful usefulness because it's, you know, something that digital asset issuers have to use. They have to pay in Tari in order to issue digital assets. They need to pay to validate rule sets around digital assets. You know, obviously there's payment to miners for securing the chain, Monero miners in this case, as Ricardo mentioned earlier. There's a lot of usefulness around this idea of a Tari token. But yeah, sure, you know, you could have a game publisher who wants to issue their own in-game currency also on the Tari network, and they want to be able to prove to their user, their consumer, that there is a finite supply. So you can absolutely do that, you know, with something like Tari for sure.
So that's great. It actually kind of sounds like there's a possibility that one of the most annoying things in software, you know, just acquisition, I guess, is the horrible activation server concept. So in theory, this sounds like Tari could be utilized as an activation server. So you could technically buy proprietary software, but not have to worry about whether this company still exists for this activation service to still be there, and just hope and, you know, cross your fingers that it still exists, kind of thing. Would that kind of thing work on Tari?
Totally, that's a great idea for sure. Why not? right? As long as the software can validate, you know, this is true on the network and you actually hold, you know, your private key, you know, then sure, why not?
Awesome. So I have another question for Ricardo, and I was watching your talk at DEF CON, and I was intrigued by an idea you mentioned about earning Monero outside of mining. So like kind of like some kind of like separate system that's, you know, allows a user to, without actually spending time for the energy building kind of thing. Could you elaborate more on that idea and how it relates to Tari?
Sure. So I think that one of the things that I've been trying to encourage is we tend to, as a community, get very hyped up and focused on merchants accepting Monero as a method of payment. And it's great, you know, when there's a VPN that accepts Monero and you want to be able to pay privately, that's fantastic. The problem is that, you know, we have this this lack of a circular economy. We don't have ways for people to acquire Monero except by buying it or mining it. So the idea that I've been pushing with people for a long time is if you are entrepreneurial, then, you know, like, where's the Patreon that accepts Monero or that pays out Monero? Where's the Fiverr that accepts Monero and pays out Monero? Where's the Mechanical Turk of Monero? There are all these models, business models, where that people struggle with globally. I mean, like, take Mechanical Turk, for example. You've got a bunch of people all over the world, particularly in India, that use Mechanical Turk. And if they get paid out into a PayPal account, they really struggle to take that money from their PayPal account and turn it into, like, money in their bank account or into cash, because the cash economy in India is massive. But, you know, going from Monero into cash is a lot easier. You have local Monero. You have a bunch of Bitcoin ATMs that accept Monero. So, you know, sort of going in and out from crypto to cash is relatively simple. But there's not an equivalent service where people can go and, like, sign up and say, hey, I need a small piece of work done. And then there's, like, people that are willing to do it for, you know, a couple of bucks here and a couple of bucks there. So it wasn't something that was sort of like inherently built on top of the network. It was more an idea about, like, you know, hey, if you are entrepreneurial, if you are a person who likes building things, then why don't you take a look at building a service like this? And, you know, we've seen with, like, the Monero jobs subreddit and local Monero and so on, there's a global community of people interested in using Monero in any way that they can. And I think that that even if a service is really early and doesn't get a ton of traction for a few months, it's still got a global audience that it would appeal to.
Nice. That's actually something that I'm kind of interested in about the idea of, like, it's similar. It sounds similar to kind of like Brave does their BAT system, and you could do it's more of like a Brave system that is, you know, sustainable and repeatable. Because I have actually never heard anybody who uses the Brave system more than just the stuff that they were given. But it sounds like that it would be a good opportunity because you could have a whole blockchain system around it for, like, the technology to share it on multiple different applications. But one of the things that I was curious about it is the sidechain structure. So just see if I understand the merge mine system. When you, if you're a miner of Monero, and you start to do you have to, like, set up another mining thing for Tari, or does it use the existing mining structure that you already have?
Yeah, so the two things would need to change. The mining pool that you would use would need to support merge mining with Tari, and the mining software that you use would need to be able to do both proof of works, both proof of work hashing algorithms. So, you know, it would be a matter of, you're an existing miner. You make sure you're pointed at a pool that supports it, and you switch to mining software that's able to do both of the POW algorithms, and off you go to the races. From a mining perspective, you don't care what's happening in the background. It's just great that you're getting, like, a bunch of free Tari along with the Monero that you're getting.
So we're almost out of time, so I'm going to have to start wrapping up here. But one thing we haven't asked yet in this entire show is, where did the name Tari come from?
So Tari is actually the name of a currency from the Mediterranean region from, you know, long ago. It has a variety of other meanings as well. And we just think it's a really cool name. So, so we went with it.
Cool. That sounds really, sorry, go ahead.
I was just kind of like, I kind of wanted it to be a reference to Stargate with Atari. I know that's kind of ridiculous, but.
Sure.
Yeah.
Whatever you want it to be.
It's nothing to do with Atari, right? You're not like going there.
No, nothing to do with.
Because it keeps sounding Atari. like you keep sounding like you say, well, I have Atari. You know, it's like, well, that's, I don't have Atari. I have Atari, whatever that is, right? Okay. So anyway, a final couple questions because we're almost out of time. Is there anything we didn't ask that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to let you go? We'll start with Naveen.
Yeah. Well, look, if what we're doing is interesting to you, please come check it out. We have a great developer community forming on Freenode on Tari Dev. So come join the channel and participate with us. You can chat with us on Telegram. Obviously visit the website. We'd love people to get involved with what we're doing. If you're interested in what we're doing from a ticketing standpoint, and this idea of an open source ticketing application that uses a super permissive license and is developed in Rust, super high performance, the Big Neon project. And again, you know, we'd love for people to contribute and participate in what we're doing.
But actually, in a moment, Rick, I'll ask you the same question. But before we do that, I actually add another question that I want to make sure gets asked, which is, so somebody in the chat room, Toad Sloth, was sort of heading towards the direction of, you know, right now you can scalp. I can, you know, if I have an extra ticket because my buddy didn't show up, I can stand in front of the venue and sell it physically to somebody. Will there be a way of doing that with stuff I purchased for Big Neon? And if we both have smartphones, can I sell a ticket to somebody else right there standing next to me?
Totally. Absolutely. So there's no reason to prevent peer-to-peer ticket transfer, right? That is something that happens. You know, I bought four tickets. I want to share the three tickets with my friends, and, you know, we all want to go to the show. They're showing up at different times. Like, you want to enable the customer behavior that people are accustomed to, for sure. But that's not how most tickets are resold. And most tickets are not resold in parking lots. Most tickets are resold using these marketplaces that charge very high fees. So that's where there's an opportunity to shift economics back to the people who are actually taking the risk on the concert.
Awesome. Thanks for answering that. And Ricardo, the same question to you. Is there anything we didn't cover that you want to make sure is covered?
Yeah, I mean, especially on a show like this, I just want to reiterate the call for contributors. I wanted to highlight four projects that are always looking for contributors and have an incredibly welcoming community. The first is Monero itself. The tech stack is C++. The GUI is Qt, but still C++. If you enjoy C++ and if you enjoy cleaning up old code that no one wants to touch, or if you enjoy, you know, challenging parts of C++, and you like variable names that are spelt incorrectly, then Monero is totally your go-to project. Best place to pick us up is #monero-dev on Freenode. Next project I wanted to highlight is MyMonero, which is a mobile and web wallet for Monero. That is native iOS, so Swift, and then native Android, so Java. And then it's got a JavaScript implementation as well with lots of WebAssembly. So if that floats your boat, then #MyMonero on Freenode. And then Tari and Big Neon are both written in Rust. Big Neon in particular is pretty awesome because it's a web app that's written in Rust. And I'm pretty sure we're like one of the first, if not the first, that are doing production grade web apps in Rust. And then Tari as well is going to be Rust all the way, or is Rust all the way, and lots of really cool challenging cryptography and cool networking stuff, and like lots of low level challenges there, reproducible builds, lots of cool things like that to play with, and lots of challenges where if you're interested and you want to learn Rust and you want to transition from C++ to Rust or from any language to Rust, then Big Neon's a great way to do a soft intro to Rust, learn the basics, and then work on Tari where all the cool stuff's happening.
Cool. And hey, I will go ahead.
Hey, Rick, do you want to mention TLU?
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing. Tari Labs University. So Tari Labs University, if you're interested in like the more technical side of blockchain blockchains, and you want to understand what Mimblewimble is, and you know what implementations exist of Mimblewimble, and what you know like what is merge mining, and some of the stuff that we spoke about, then we have this thing called Tari Labs University. It's also open source. You're also welcome to contribute to it, whether it is adding to existing articles or writing a new article. And there's tons of content on there, and it's it goes from like the deeply technical that you know cryptography is sort of more better suited to cryptographers and researchers, down to like you know more entry level stuff that even if you don't have tons of familiarity with how blockchains work, you'll be able to enjoy it.
And may I also suggest, because I have a personal interest in this, that if you are building a new Greenfield application that needs to be on iOS and Android and possibly pieces of it on the web, that you really look into Flutter and Dart, definitely making a huge impact in the world. So check that out, because you can write the code base once for both iOS and Android, and you can share pieces of that with your web app in Angular Dart. So take a look at that. Two more questions for both of you, and again, we're almost out of time, so we're going to go quickly here. Favorite scripting language and favorite text editor? Ricardo first.
So I'm a huge fan of JavaScript. No, I'm kidding. Mm-hmm. I'm not.
What? I was about to say that's the first.
Happy for a second there. Actually, thought you were real.
No, not a chance. Python. You know, I do a lot of Python, and when I'm not playing in Python, then I'm playing in Bash. And favorite text editor is BBEdit on Mac. And if I'm on the command line, you know, I used to be a VI guy, but now I'm Nano all the way. Please don't kill me.
Okay. That'll work. And Naveen, same questions?
Yeah, so definitely BBEdit on the editor. And yeah, I mean, Python is cool. And if you're doing it the Pythonic way, which I know Ricardo really loves.
I like to tell people. I like to tell people nobody chooses JavaScript. JavaScript chooses you. That's just the way it works out. You are stuck with it. Hey guys, it's been really great talking about this. Hope to have you on in a few more years and see where this is all gone. Sounds like it's heading in the right directions. And the best of luck to all of you. So thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
Awesome. That was Naveen, Jane, and Ricardo. Oops, scroll. There we go, Ricardo Spagni. I should have remembered that. Duh. What do you think there, Michael?
I mean, I think it's really, really informative. There's a lot of information that I learned from this, because it's a complicated topic, but it's also like has a lot of potential to be very useful even to people who are just like, you know, just their users who don't really want to understand the technology, because they could just use it through like a web app or a mobile app and, you know, get all the features and benefits of it. And I was especially happy to hear about the possibility that this could be used as a getting rid of the activation servers that need to just die forever, because that'd be great.
Awesome. Yeah, I enjoyed it too. And I've got to say, I enjoyed this probably more than I thought I was going to when I woke up this morning. But that's good. We had a fun blockchain show, which is always a good thing. And I hope the one coming up in three or four more episodes is going to be decent as well. So again, we're almost out of time. So let me go ahead and run through the upcoming guests. Speaking of upcoming guests, Megalix is next week, which is a smart infrastructure which analyzes usage in containers and adjusts parameters. I met the guys that did this up at the KubeCon, and did a stately dome decree. No, that's I said I wasn't going to do that anymore. All right, anyway, KubeCon up in Seattle a few weeks ago. They were really fun, and they wanted to be on the show, so they're on the show. Following that is Zen, X-E-N, Zen, which had previously we had it back on in 2009. I think some stuff's probably happened since then, but basically it's a hypervisor. It allows you to have multiple things running on your system at one time. We've got a show coming on about the open source processes as Instacluster, and they're a big contributor apparently to Kafka and Cassandra, which are a couple of, I think, Apache Foundation projects. And then finally, the last guest we have currently scheduled, I'm going to start scheduling some more, is Aion, A-I-O-N. It's at the root of the Aion network is a purpose-built public blockchain called Aion 1. Of course, they wouldn't call it Aion 2. That would not make any sense. Designed to connect other blockchains and manage its own robust applications, Aion 1 also provides the economic system that incentivizes interoperability in the ecosystem. Again, if you're going to play a blockchain drinking game, be careful of that show as well. I'm sure we're going to mention blockchain at least twice in that show, so take care of that. We have the big spreadsheet link to the homepage for this show, which is twit.tv/floss. You can look at that list and see if we're working on one of your favorite projects. If we're not working on one of your favorite projects, please have the project leader or community coordinator talk to me, merlin@stonehenge.com. My address is right there on that page. We have a live stream at 9:30 a.m. Pacific time on Wednesdays when the show's being taped at live.twit.tv. You can watch us and all the behind-the-scenes junk that we go through, and even provide questions for us, as Toad Sloth did today. That was a lot of fun. You can follow us at Floss Weekly on Google Plus, and follow that. It's tweeted over to @FlossWeekly on Twitter. You can follow me at Randall L. Schwartz on Google Plus for at least another couple of months, and then that tweets over to @Merlin on Twitter. I am going to be at Scale 2019 in Pasadena in early March. Please come up and say hi if you see me there. I have no speaking role, but I'll probably be hosting a Flutter and Dart boff as I did last year. I also gave a talk on Flutter last year, but that was a lot of fun. So anyway, that's the only thing I'm plugging. Michael, what do you want to plug?
You can check out my podcast at tuxdigital.com/thisweekinlinux, where it's a Linux news show where I cover open source software that's related to Linux or Linux distributions and all kinds of things, and as well as my other podcast, Destination Linux, where it's a group of four guys who just like to talk about their passion for Linux, and we discuss all things that are like related to the maybe news, but also just general topics over and that kind of thing. So if you want to check it out, you can go to that for destinationlinux.org.
Cool, cool, cool. And thanks once again for joining me as a co-host. And I expect to see you back as often as you can make yourself available, because you do a great job as a co-host. So that's really, really fun. Otherwise, we're at the end of our hour. So we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.